years ago. Some of the people in this room were actively involved in it, and the ADA created this program specifically to look at an alternative, a new dental team member, the community dental health coordinator. So what I'm going to do today is provide you with an overview of the training of the CDHC, give you some of the data from our evaluation, which we recently completed, and describe some of the success stories of the CDHCs that are now working in the field. I will also be introducing the director of CAPR, Council on Access Prevention and Interprofessional Relations, Dr. Jane Grover, who is going to talk to you about what's next for the CDHC program. So just a quick definition, it is a new dental team member who serves as a conduit between underserved communities and dentists. This curriculum is about 1,800 hours of training. That's about a year and a half. It includes an internship as well as didactics. It was developed by dentists. The CDHCs work under a dentist supervision, which is very important with the state dental practice acts. They educate, inform, and prevent. That's where they have their focus. And they're also trained to do patient navigation. And this was built, this model was built mimicking the community health worker model, which is proven to be very, very successful, particularly in trying to overcome barriers in the communities where these CDHCs are serving. And I want to stress that all of the trainees that came into the program came from their clinics, their communities, and went back to them for their internship, and that's where they are primarily working at this time. Again, it's unique instruction, about 1,800 hours of clinical science, dental. Again, I want to really emphasize that there's a lot that is focused on prevention, routine preventive services, and patient navigation care coordination. Those are kind of the key aspects of the program. Again, we look at both a community health worker and health promotion facets of the program. Some of the modules that the student trainees learned were advocacy and outreach, cultural competency, interviewing skills, reporting, teaching, and they also were schooled in legal and ethical issues. On the dental skills side, they all received an introduction to dentistry, and I want to say that some of these trainees had no prior dental experience. Some were dental assistants. Some of them were dental hygienists. So we had a variety of trainees. So obviously some of them had a higher level of skills before they started. But the current base curriculum includes these basic skills in dental caries, periodontal diseases, palliative care, and also some information about financing systems. So as the training program came to an end, we started our first cohort in 2009, and we had 34 trainees complete the program in three different cohorts that ended in approximately December of last year. So as we were nearing the end of the completion of the training, the ADA began the evaluation phase of this project. And I want to talk a little bit about that right now. Basically, we were looking at two phases of the evaluation. One was to look at the training itself, what the internship and the didactic program brought to the trainees. And then we really, really wanted to look at how did the CDHC actually work in a variety of practice settings? What were the outcomes? What was the functionality of the CDHC in the field? So we conducted two different evaluations. The first was a structure and process evaluation of the program, and we looked at the training sites, which were Temple University, University of Oklahoma. UCLA trained one cohort, actually two, and then we brought in A.T. Stills in Arizona for a third cohort. And we looked at, you know, the various components, similar to how a dental assisting or a dental hygiene program would be reviewed. So we looked at all of the data to see if the training was adequate for the pilot program. We then also looked at the actions and experiences of the trainees themselves, and we looked at their classroom experience, their internship experiences, and faculty, et cetera, et cetera. for this part of the evaluation, the ADA hired independent consultants to do this data analysis. The first consultant actually gathered the data and all the components of number of classes, number of student attrition rates, et cetera, et cetera. And the second team of consultants actually analyzed the information that was gathered specifically to this pilot program. So we wanted to ensure, because the ADA had developed the curriculum with some outside consultants as well, that we had an outside independent evaluation. So what they found was that basically the curriculum is very appropriate for educating this new category of dental health care worker. It's well-founded, and it has the potential to be incorporated into the programs of other educational institutions. And Dr. Grover will be talking about that, how we're going to transition this now for going forward. Okay. So the next part of the evaluation was we wanted to really look at whether, in fact, the CDHC could impact their communities and improve access to care through outreach in their respective communities. What we really could not measure were true outcomes, because we just didn't have the luxury of time and nor the funding specific to that. But as a proxy for this, we believe that if we could increase access for people who had not been seen by a dentist into a clinic and get them into a preventive model of care and improve their oral health, then as a proxy that would improve their overall dental health. So the way we went about this is we created a case study model, and we'll be talking about that. It's descriptive statistics. We did some analytics. We developed case studies for each CDHC in their clinics. We asked them where did they want to impact, what types of things did they want to work on, and we developed each story based on that. So we ended up with 46 case studies that we reported to our House of Delegates just this week. That was in 14 clinics, urban settings, rural settings, and American Indian settings. Some of them were IHS clinics. And we found the impact to be extraordinary. These men and women touched 11,000 patient lives. That's not an exact number. But their work in outreach and in patient navigation contributed to total revenues to those clinics of $1.85 million. So we feel that that was pretty significant findings. We also tried to summarize our data. So we have these 46 stories, and there's data for each of those. But we also did some aggregate analysis just to kind of get a sense of the types of things that they are working on. So some of the case studies were school-based programs, and these were preschool through high school. Some of these were targeted populations, such as pregnant women, pediatrics. One pediatric clinic, on the medical side of the clinic, the CDHCs were able to go in there and then actually talk with the moms and the caregivers and bring those children into the dental clinic, and the findings were very, very successful. Some diabetic patients, HIV patients. The CDHCs worked with homeless people, foster children, even a juvenile detention center where oral health was clearly not part of the program. So they really did a lot of very interesting projects, both in their internship and in their current work now. We also assessed the revenue impact of the CDHCs in each of the clinics, and we looked to see did they actually drive new patients or get patients back into the clinic. So what were the actual patient rates? So some of the findings, I'm going to give you a very, very overview because there's so many permutations of this data. But you can see here the school-based programs, the green, they were very, very successful. They contributed to a significant amount of the income. The targeted populations, about 500, under 500,000, and all the case studies together, again, that 1.85 million. We wanted to look at how they were by location of the clinic. And we found that the tribal clinics, the impact was most significant. Now, partly that is because of the model. Some of the tribal clinics do not have to, they have their own prescription for what can and cannot be done on their own land. And I'm not an expert in that at all, so I don't want to speak too much to that. But we did have quite a number of practices that were located on those on the Indian reservations and serving those populations. We had a fairly good impact in our urban locations, and the rural locations, those were very, very small in many cases. So again, you have to look at this, you know, and realize that it doesn't take into account the sample sizes as such. So this is really a sort of a broad brush overview, but I want to just impart to you that we did find that there was a very, very successful result with their work. One of the other things that we were asked to do, and we wanted to be able to look at, was whether it was a sustainable model. The cost of training young men and the men and women in our program was substantial because it was a pilot program and we were using universities. But the didactic portion of the program is about $13,000 to $14,000. So, you know, we wanted to look at what's the return on the investment for someone to do that. We're still working with the Department of Education on getting approval for the curriculum so that it's a sustainable model. But we also looked at the average salary of a CDHC we looked at dental assistant, expanded function duty assistants, and dental hygienists. And you'll see some of the ones we ran through a calculator, made quite a few assumptions, but basically, with the exception of those two in red, which was a very low outreach capacity, all of the models that we did the data analysis on were sustainable. In other words, they were contributing revenues that far exceeded their expected salary within a calendar year. So now what I'd like to do is turn this program over to Dr. Jane Grover, because now we're at the point in this pilot program of 3+ years and where we had trainees and evaluation to what's next. The ADA has put a lot of time and effort into this program, and we want to see it successfully in the United States. And I'll let Dr. Grover, who's working on that part right now. Again, Dr. Grover joined the ADA in April of this year as Director of the Council on Access, Prevention, and Interprofessional Relations. She spent the prior 12 years in a federally qualified health center in Michigan. And I did not write a bio on you, Dr. Grover, so...
I've been around for a long time, and I know there are a lot of familiar faces in this room, so I'm very glad to have 5 minutes of your time. And having been at a health center for 12 years and been very active with the National Association of Community Health Centers, I can tell you that there's a lot of unused capacity in the community health center world and community clinic world. And the beauty of this program, the beauty of the people that are in this program, that were in the pilot program, is that they are from the communities that they will serve. And they are having a community conversation, culturally competent community conversation about oral health services. And that is so critical right now, because right now we don't have a lot of community conversations about oral health outside of a dental operatory, outside of a dental appointment. We don't really have a structure and process in order to do that. So we're delighted that this program has shown the outcomes that it has. One CDHC working one day a week in a diabetes clinic dropped the no-show rate from 18% to zero. That's remarkable, particularly when you think about the no-show rate in a typical oral health department in a community health center hovers around 20 to 40%. We had a CDHC this summer do a four-month sabbatical in New Mexico at a community health center where the average no-show rate is 40 to 60%. And she was working in the community. She was also working in the health center itself. She happened to be a hygienist. Thank you, Dr. Ismail, for letting her come to New Mexico. We're having these conversations with community clinics and community health centers because they are looking at the missed opportunities for getting people into care, into already existing care that could be more productive and could have more community outreach. New Mexico is a state that is part of our transition plan for the CDHC, the Community Dental Health Coordinator. That state has approved legislation for community dental health coordinators to be able to do temporization and scaling. And that's pretty important when you consider that so many people need that type of care. One CDHC, 4 months of a sabbatical in New Mexico, and the executive director of that health center said, I don't care what she can do clinically. The most important value of her services to us is the extra 5 to 10 encounters she's creating per week for the dental department, taking the no-show rate down to a much more acceptable level. Where are we now with the transition plan? We are having conversations with colleges, primary care associations, community health centers in Florida, Louisiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Illinois, Oregon, North Dakota, Arizona, and New Mexico. And we are going to be building a program in California as well. We have 34 CDHCs right now working in 10 states. So it's pretty remarkable how this workforce has blossomed from a pilot program, and we look forward to the transition. I have informational pamphlets on that, and I also welcome your questions and comments. And if there is a community college in your area and a health center in your area that would be interested in this program, please contact me because we are ready, willing, and able to come out and see this get off the ground. Thank you very much.